Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, X-Men 97.
Woo!
Yeah!
What was that, Pete? You're supposed to do the do-do-do-do-do-do-do. There we go. All right. We're going to be talking about...
dancing monkey for
you. I'm all thrown. I'm Alex. Hello.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- X-Men 97. So if you haven't watched it already on Disney Plus, please do. We're going to spoil the heck out of it. But big episode, lots of stuff is going down after the funeral of Gambit. Rogue is going ham trying to track down Bolivar Trask, and Henry Gyrick is apparently how you pronounce his name. Another well, big surprise for me. Gyrick.
Oh, yeah. I said Gyrick.
Oh, there we go. Well, we're all different people. Anyway, she is trying to track them down, leading to, spoiler, the big ultimate reveal of this season's villain, Bastion, who has been manipulating things in the background the entire time, including Mr. Sinister. Meanwhile, Roberto da Costa goes and comes out to his mom as a mutant, thanks to the help of Jubilee, with some twists and turns there. And, Scott and Jean are going to do some stuff.
Yeah, no, that's, right. that's the clone of Scott.
Yeah. Was it because you didn't say Cyclops that mess?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. No, I got momentarily confused about the Jean Madeline thing in my head. It's early in the morning here when we're taping. Anyway, lots of stuff going down with our friends, the X-Men. Also, Nightcrawler officially on the team after his introduction.
He did some officiating.
Credits. He did some officiating, did lots of priest and brother stuff going on here. So big episode. And then Stinger at the end, as we suspected, Magneto is alive. And he's getting shaved.
Getting shaved.
Everybody loves now, a good that's shaved a villainy. Magneto, right?
Oh, yeah. I like my Magneto clean, baby.
Do you think he leaves metal shavings?
He grows a metal beard?
Metal.
I don't know.
He manipulates metal. He's
As people have been pointing out to me online, I don't really know the X-Men very well, so I'm just going to
What's weird is he's just getting sitting there as a guy uses a metal razor on him. It's like he could clearly just, you know, like...
No. He has the power suppression collar designed by Forge.
Yes.
Wow. Nice plug. Way to plug, buddy.
Yeah. Alex invested heavily in Forge's collar startup. Fucked up collar.
Doing really well.
Yeah. Is it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Hate pays, baby.
That's the name of the company, right?
Yeah. Hate pays, baby.
And you're a baby in that situation, right? Hate pays, baby.
Yes, nobody puts Hate Pays Baby in the corner, I always say. What are we talking about? You were going to say something about this episode, Justin?
I have a question about the episode.
Yes, you have a question. Yes we always start every episode of our podcast opening the floor to questions before we get into the plot.
So when you finish this question, I have a bastion.
Oh, okay, great, cool. Bright Eyes was the title of it.
Yes.
I watched the whole thing, and I was like, I still don't get the connection.
That is a reference to the original series, X-Men, the animated series, where Rogue, I believe, when she meets Cable for the first time, calls him Bright Eyes.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Thank you for explaining that.
I didn't know that exactly.
You know your X-Men.
I think that's just a Rogue-ism. And I was like, oh, this episode is about Rogue dealing with loss. And Gambit, I feel like. That was. Yeah, I thought it was a more romantic thing.
I think these titles have multiple meanings, so I think you can take away what you want. I think that's the specific reference there. Also, they keep talking about Cable and looking at his eyes and be like, you have the same eyes as that baby I knew for a couple of days. So there you go.
When you meet a baby, you know your baby.
Yeah. When you meet a baby for the first time, I mean, it's, you know, you clock the eyes right away.
I look deep into every baby's eyes to the point where the parents are like, hey, man, get out of here. And I'm like, what if this baby's going into the future?
Exactly.
I have to protect the species.
That brings up my second question. You guys are both parents. How excited are you for when your kids come back from the future to then talk down
with a metal arm and a huge gun?
Yeah.
Excited.
Could happen at any time.
Yeah. Ooh, that's exciting.
That's the beauty of time.
I think that's the only reason to have kids, really. You know what I mean?
Yes. Here's an actual scientific fact is the eye color changes over time. Like, the eye color that a baby has does not stick. So there's no fucking way they'd be able to identify
kids. I don't know, because my eyes stayed the same color the whole time.
Huge logical flaw. Huge.
No, I believe almost all babies are born with blue eyes, and then it changes.
I still have my blue eyes that I had as a child.
Well, you're still growing. Blues? You're still growing up.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for noticing.
And you know they're going to change eventually. That's going to be quite a day.
You're getting so big, Pete.
Hey, Paze, baby. Hey,
okay, Paze, so baby. Probably my last question for you guys.
Yeah,
at the beginning animation. Yes, it is. At the beginning animation flip, you know, we get this promo for Marvel Zombies. I feel like it should be the other way. It should be a kind of homage to the animation that's coming before the thing that I saw, or catered to X-Men animation because I'm watching an X-Men animated show. Am I the only one?
Well, I'll throw out two things to you. First of all, I don't think that specifically Marvel Zombies, the upcoming animated show, so much as the episode of Marvel Zombies that was in What If? So that's probably what they're making reference to there.
Okay.
Additionally, this episode is a terrible time to make that point, Pete, because it connects back to multiple previous iterations of animated series. We've got General Ross from the Incredible Hulk series. Bo DeMeo, the showrunner who was fired for unknown reasons, has said that was at least his intention there, was this is the same General Ross from that series. We had Captain America from from previous appearances on X-Men, the animated series,
but
also I think he was in the Spider-Man animated series, which is supposed to be canon with the series as well. Plus the fact that it's voiced by Josh Keaton, who does the voice of Captain America on What If. We get a little bit of the first Avenger sting kind of playing through the score as well. So lots of stuff going on there at the same time. So I understand what you're saying, Pete, but you're dead wrong.
Oh, okay. So I'm undead, I would say, maybe wrong.
You're undead wrong. I have a nice one. Let's move on. I think we've been stuck in this for too long. But the big thing I want to talk.
Justin, we're still in the Q&A portion of the podcast. Yeah. Do you have a question or more?
Yes, I have a question. Because I want to just move this forward to the stuff that matters. Why is Wolverine in his underwear in the opening credits?
That hits me every time.
It hits me every time.
And then his clothes go whoop.
Yeah. Right on him. It's so strange because it's like, oh, let's show him at his most powerful. He's literally wearing underwear and doing nothing. And then his clothes magic on something he can't do. And he jumps to the screen. I was like, this is such a funny, weird idea. It makes sense in the past that they did it because they were like, what is this?
In the past, we used to wear underwear and now we don't.
I think it just shows how Wolverine is so relatable because, like, he's just sitting around in his house in his underwear just like the rest of us. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
So when you see someone in their underwear, your first thought is relatable. I get it, man.
Yeah, I get it.
You're just like me.
My underwear.
Well, Breaking Bad, when he's running.
We should actually talk about the important things of the episode, but two things that I want to say about Wolverine for a second, that one that's been kind of bumping around on the internet and the other one that really struck me in this episode. The first one that's been bumping around is people very lauding the show for not centering it all around Wolverine, which is what all the comics have become. Every movie became. Most of the animated shows post X-Men, the animated series, became as well. And I definitely agree with that. I think, like, as much as we all love Wolverine.
We all do love Wolverine.
Making him part of the tapestry and allowing all of the characters time, I think ultimately kind of makes the character stronger, having him be actually part of the team versus, like, the focus of every single plot line. Do you guys agree? Well,
I agree with you, except I feel like it's almost purposefully under. We never see him, I feel like. And I agree with you that I don't want him to be the center of it all, because we've seen a million Wolverine stories. But it almost feels like he's the cool guy we're trying to, like, teach a lesson. And it's like, nope, you can't come out and play today. He has to stay on the sidelines through all of this stuff. To the point in this episode, they reference it where they're like, hey, man, you weren't in Genosha. End of statement. Okay.
I just think it's one of those things where, you know, the creators of the show are smart. You know what I mean? People want Wolverine. They're going to kind of hold them back and give us a little taste here and there. But, you know, I think
taste
they're just being
underwear Wolverine.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think it's just being smart about it. You know what I mean? Like hanging out in your underwear. You're just being smart.
Yeah, I do agree with you here, Pete. I think they're holding back on Wolverine for some moments.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get episodes. Wolverine kind of episodes, you know, every once in a while.
The other thing that really struck me this episode, there's that weird shot when they're on the Blackbird and he pops his claws and he says something. I legitimately do not remember what he said because I was like, what?
Why did you pop your claws? Yeah.
Why did you pop your claws? But like seeing him pop his claws and smile really struck me. Like, when's the last time in literally anything we ever saw Wolverine smile? Wolverine be like, not be like, this hurts my soul. Yeah. And I liked
it's
that.
True.
I enjoyed the shot, even though it didn't make any sense.
Well, and I think this show specifically is always, throughout the whole run of the series, making Wolverine this miserable cuss who's just, like, running around so angsty, like, my life! So I think to see him smile was a real breath of fresh air.
Yes.
I think
happy Wolverine is who we got.
You know, I think he's also popping his claws just to annoy everybody else in the plane because you're like, dude, put those away. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't the time. We're...
Do you know what I usually call him? I usually call him Papa Claus.
Papa Claus?
Yeah.
Can Papa Claus come out and play?
Okay, so, you know, the episode starts on a rainy grave, and you can't have a funeral without rain. And so I think the somber kind of like long shot.
Wait, was
that
rain
we saw...
there? Rain Sinclair. You're referring to, I believe.
No, I was talking about actual
from
rain.
The New Mutants.
I'm talking about when the Lord cries on us, the people. You know what I mean?
Rain was featured in the Alanis Morissette song, Ironic, pretty directly.
She was. Alanis wrote it about a wolf girl she met.
At her wedding day.
At her wedding day, yeah.
Did you think that you know, Nightcrawler's gambling puns were too much or just kind of nicely done?
Did you think
the
photo they chose of Gambit was too much? Where he's like, I'm going to pose with my cards in an arc just like this. This is my promo photo.
Your accent is
Marvel
awful.
Man.
Yeah. Also, that was way off because he would never say my promo photo. He would say, this is Gambit's promo photo.
It was like his Marvel Masterwork card, which is what 100%. I want to be buried next to.
Yeah. No,
not Gambit's. I mean my own.
Okay. Thanks
featuring
for
Nightcrawler
specific.
As a priest, having just introduced him, I think is... It's really great because it's such fidelity to the comics. But someone walking in not knowing about him is like, why is that guy? Is he a Catholic demon? Like, what's happening here? I just think that's so funny. Shouts to Belladonna and Gambit's bro, who's there crying still from when he was featured in the episode like 4 seasons ago. It was great to see them. And let me say, the Gambit Rogue stuff keeps hitting harder. In the opening credits, we feature the kiss when they're on the basketball court. And then to come to this, I thought was really well done.
I'm glad you're talking about the opening credits again because they're just really just fantastic. I mean, the theme music gets you just so pumped. Your worries just go out the window. It's just... Such a
what
magical
are you talking?
Time.
You talk about being in your underwear, being happy, and your worries. Is that
are you just
don't
watching
add
this?
These
are you watching
up.
The show in your underwear and you fall asleep after the opening credits? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
He's
yeah,
like,
most
I'll get
time.
Through this podcast. I'll just keep bringing up the part I saw. The opening credits. It's like a guy who read the first 10 pages and is doing a book report.
Speaking of shout outs,
X-Men
to people.
97 is a land of many contrasts.
Shout out to, you know, why we're shouting out the criers here, Jubilee, you know, just holding it down, saying the things we're all thinking, like, where is Rogue right now? And why isn't she at this lovely funeral?
Two things that I thought were very nice about this scene. One, it definitely, I think, tipped the hand in the right way that Magneto was still alive. The fact that they were like, straight up, we are burying Gambit and only Gambit, and we're just talking about Gambit being dead. And then there were a couple little casual references to Magneto throughout, but I think that was very purposeful plotting to, like, tip of the hat to you if you already figured out that he was still around. And then the other thing, just to get back to Nightcrawler for a second, we didn't talk about this the first time. I love his design in this show. Yeah. Just like the shadow on his head that goes straight up into his hair, the glowing eyes, everything. Looking back, I think he had like a blue afro back in the original series. This is much better. It just looks real good.
Yeah. Going to the, like, not worrying about the reality of, not worrying about the reality of, like, how would he, his eyes glow in the middle of the day and all that is a great choice. Just like, let's do it the cool stuff.
Seems like he has the bright eyes.
Let's talk about the Rogue stuff throughout, because there's so many big scenes that happen with her here. The first one is that awesome attack on General Ross's stronghold that establishes her as stronger than the Hulk. Also, every episode, the show gets more and more anime-inspired, it feels like.
Yeah.
That long leg kick thing.
And I also think, isn't that a reference to like Marvel versus Capcom?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I think so.
Well,
only
it's a move.
I literally was like, because I never really played that game, but I had a like weird brain hit on that. I would like to.
What are you doing today? Like, go and it's available. Like, make it happen, dude. It's
I never really played Marvel versus Capcom either. I used to. We had a game cabinet at college for the like X-Men game, just like the X-Men versus game, which is very sweet. I used to play as the Sentinel.
The game Sentinel? Cabinet.
What is that?
That's fucked up.
Of course you would.
Pete, I can't go play that game. They closed the arcade in my mall like 10 years ago.
Well, you can buy it online, bro. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to live this way without playing the game. You can go and play it.
Great seeing General Ross. This felt like, love the Hulk name drop. But first is the stuff we were talking about with Doctor Strange and Forge's magic in the last episode. This felt to be tonally consistent with the world of X-Men 97. It did not feel like it took me out in any way. I like seeing him. I like seeing this Captain America as well, which had enough connections to other things, but it didn't feel like, again, it took me out of the episode. How did you guys feel about that, given our discussion of the last episode about the Strange magic, the MCU magic?
I thought it was well done. I also, it was like subtle enough, but what made us more aware of the larger world in a good way. And the burn of her winging his shield.
Oh, my God, dude. Dang. That was a stinger, dude. That, you know, he had to go. It's not like he can fly. Like, he has to go walk all the way up that mountain to go get that freaking shield. I mean, it was, you know, because sometimes on a show that's centered around the X-Men, you have cameos and you're like, how are you going to handle Captain America? They did not try to, like, you know, it was basically she called them a cop and then threw his shield away and kind of like flew away. And I was just like, damn, like Captain America does not look good in this episode at all.
Well, they're really digging down in a very clear and non-subtle way about mutants as other. You know, this is jumping over to the Jubilee Roberto thing, but that conversation where Jubilee was like, I wouldn't want my parents to find out on the evening news that I died in Genosha is 100% straight Pulse nightclub. Like, that's what they're writing about there, or similar events like that. And similarly here, the scene, to jump back to Captain America and Rogue, it's very much about, like, being an ally. And being an ally is standing up no matter what. It's not being like, I can't do that because that's politically tough. It's,
well, and I think that literally political, there's the Cyclops conversation with the president, which is that as well.
Oh my God. Yeah. Talk about burns. Check the headlines, Mr. President. Oh, Cyclops snap.
So they're the hologram hang up. Like, I think laudably they're not being very subtle about any of this stuff. And I appreciate them digging into it. You know, that's always been present in X-Men. There was that whole conversation about, like, X-Men is woke now, which is the world's stupidest take, because this has always been there. They're just continuing it on this show.
Well, and especially seeing repercussions from the two episodes ago, all of the big reveals there, the horrible, tragic things that happened, and showing the real consequences that it's not like it's better, it's the same except worse, putting the X-Men even more in a corner from a just cultural, societal point of view. At the same time, all of their enemies are working together in a way that seems crazy. So it's really setting us up for big, big things happening in the next few episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did want to just kind of finish up the Jubilee going with, the mutant as he kind of like comes out to his parents. It was very kind of touching, but I also glad they didn't sugarcoat it and then make the parents like the most understanding, like, oh, of course, whatever. Like, I liked what they did there. Mm-hmm. It didn't kind of like hide from what they were saying. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was really well done. There's also that fun cut in the middle there where Jubilee is like, okay, here's how we're going to kind of ease into it. Smash cut to I'm a mutant. fun bit there. And I agree with you. The way the mom reacted felt very realistically done.
Yeah.
I like the Jubilee-Roberto relationship. I think it's actually a nice sort of sweetness to an otherwise very intense emotional show.
Yeah. One quick thing before I forget, just an Easter egg from the Rogue Captain America scene. They have that shot when she lands in the snow and you see his bike. The license plate is AVNA10, which is Avengers Annual 10, which is the first appearance of Rogue. And in that she, I think, reveals her powers by like kissing Captain America and taking his memories and stuff. So that was a fun tip there. I also thought like, they were not explicit about this, but just having Rogue and Captain America together seemed like a reference to Uncanny Avengers, which is a mashup of the Avengers and the X-Men in a unity squad. And it's usually Captain America and Rogue leading the team kind of together. So I liked all that stuff. I thought that was good.
Yeah. I mean, while we're talking about that, I mean, Rogue, the unhinged Rogue was, I thought, done really well, where it wasn't like too absurd. It really still felt like it was Rogue, and it didn't feel too far off. Because sometimes when you have somebody who's like, you know, I also liked the way that was kind of handled.
To follow the Rogue line, like we have her taking, like using her powers on Gyrick, right, later on. And then she, I was
wakes
a little confused.
Like by a graveyard in Mexico, apparently, on the Day of the Dead, which I was like, man, what happened? You know, and why doesn't she immediately know his? Because it seemed like a real important piece of information that she got there before she blacked out.
Well, she doesn't really, they don't really use her information to find him. It happens separately. So that whole thing was a little strange. Maybe just setting her up to make a more extreme move like she does at the end of the episode. But that was, I felt like Rogue, where I was like waking up and not knowing quite what happened.
Yeah. I mean, they might flash back to that. I think the idea was that, let's talk about Bastion for a second. For anybody who doesn't know, Bastion is very complicated. In the comic book, it's like crazy complicated. We don't know, obviously, what they're going to do in the show necessarily coming up. And I think they won't do this exactly. But essentially, there's this robot called Nimrod, who is Pete's favorite character. You see him in the opening credits getting torn apart by some of the X-Men. He is a hyper-advanced sentinel from the future who travels back in time. In the comics, kills a bunch of the Hellfire Club. I don't think he kills any of the X-Men necessarily. But he ultimately ends up in this human form as a construction worker. While he's doing construction, he finds a buried master mold. When he touches it, the code of the master mold infects him. He ultimately fights the X-Men. This is, I hope
this is good.
Yeah, this makes sense. This makes
construction. Let me tell me more about this construction work.
Well, we all know.
After every episode of the show, my kids have a question. I'm like, all right, how much time do you have? Because there's no simple way of answering this, because I haven't even gotten to the Siege Perilous, which is this magic crystal that most of the X-Men went through that changed their histories and rewrote stuff. Rogue and Nimrod fell through there. And when Nimrod fell through the Siege Perilous, it merged him and the Master Mold into one being, which became Bastion, who wandered for a while, was adopted by this human woman, and ultimately... So he is like a even more advanced version of Nimrod, who can create sentinels called Prime Sentinels, which we see in this episode, that are essentially like cyborgs. Yeah, that are in the comics, it was sleeper agents. Here it seems to be like reanimated dead flesh or something like that. But whatever it is, he's bad news. There you go. I don't know. It is crazy complicated. He was introduced he was introduced in a crossover called Operation Zero Tolerance that we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah.
So is that OZT?
That's what OZT is. You should have had that in the Q&A section at the beginning, Pete, but we'll bring it up now anyway, even though we're past. So yeah, he is the leader of Operation Zero Tolerance. He creates a false flag operation in the books. They assassinate a presidential candidate and blame it on mutants, amp up mutant tensions, and he's like, great, I can bring my Prime Sentinel program out into the open, and he attacks the X-Men and all mutants.
So as we all know, robots secretly just want to be construction workers. It's a thing. It's just
losers.
Cindy Lauper sang just about that. Robots just want to be construction workers.
Oh my god.
Thank you for singing that. Want to be doctors. Other robots want to be.
My question is, why the extra layer? Why not just have it be Mr. Sinister? Why go with Bastion? Because I'm wondering if anybody at home is going, oh shit, Bastion? Like,
I agree with you. The scene where Mr. Sinister is like, hey, Bastion, I work for you. I was like, he works for you? Mr. Sinister's whole thing is like, I do my own weird stuff.
Yeah,
off to the side. So, like, it's a weird relationship. It does seem strange to have both. I like Bastion. This series has used
you
a lot
like
of
Mr. Bastion.
I like having Bastion there.
I want to back up the truck here. So your ideal villain is a robot who's horrible and nobody ever wants to see him posing as a human construction worker named Bastion. Like, that's your favorite.
No. You got very confused by my very straightforward explanation.
Oh, okay.
Nimrod was the construction worker before he touched the Master Mold and fell through the Siege Perilous.
Wait. So you're saying Nimrod, before being a robot, was an actual construction worker, not a robot wanting to
Nimrod, I believe, if I remember correctly, got damaged and thought he was a construction worker until he touched the Master Mold in his construction site and then remembered he was Nimrod, was infected with the code of the Master Mold, then fell through the Siege Perilous and was transformed into Bastion, because the Siege Perilous rewrites your entire history and life. So he's
I can only picture a giant Nimrod robot wearing a hard hat, being like, off to work, and all the other workers being like, hey, what's up with the old pink purple guy over here? Yeah.
Who's that guy who looks like a big diamond?
Yeah. But what I was saying is, like, I do like Bastion, because Bastion is a nice echo. Like, the X-Men series, animated series, has always been focused on Sentinels. Started with Sentinels. It's about, like, using robots to
so you like Bastion because it continues the Sentinel threat, is what you're saying?
It continues, like, a core idea of this show, but raises it and makes it more threatening. And the zero tolerance aspect, like, they've been able to sort of beat Sentinels in different ways, and now it sort of, of course, has to get better. Mr. Sinister's been sort of a sub-boss, I think, this whole time. And they're usually just a little bit separated. The fact they're together is strange.
So you're just saying, like, oh, cool, Bastion, not Nimrod, who, you know, it's another
You're just
version.
Bothered by the fact that it's Nimrod. You don't like Nimrod, so
I just can't believe
Bastion.
Someone would be like, Bastion, he's sick. You know what I mean? And you're just
I think I agree with Justin here. I'm not, like, a huge Bastion fan. Looking back at some of those pages from Operation Zero Tolerance, I was like, ew. I don't like this at all. This is stuff that just reminds me very unfavorably of 90s comics. It's that very exaggerated style that I just honestly could never really get into. But thematically, they have been very consistent to the show. Like Justin is saying, they started with Sentinels. They started with... Bolivar Trask in the first episode. Yeah. The whole thing has been Magneto being like, accept us, we will work with you. And following up on Xavier's dream, to have them run into a wall here that is Bastion, that is a combination of human and robots.
Nimrod
trying to stop them and try to absolutely obliterate them, I think makes a lot of thematic sense. I do agree with you guys on the Mr. Sinister thing. I like the joke about him being like, you've been trying to do this since 1992. Good reference.
Yeah.
For sure.
It is weird. Well, it's interesting to me that this also connects with the current X-Men continuity so cleanly as well, where it's like robots and humans trying to kill mutants, and then the robots sort of go too far. And that's a little bit – it's a nice synergy that they're both happening at the same time.
I'll also mention – wait, one other thing that I wanted to mention, Easter egg-wise, because Bo DeMato said this as well, is Bastion's been in pretty much every episode. I think we already talked about the fourth episode where there was like a cutoff picture of him on Forge's wall.
Yeah.
But he was in the second episode in a war room scene towards the beginning of the episode, his back to the camera. He was at the gala. Like he sort of passes by in front of the camera at one point. And he was even in the first episode. This was the trickiest one. I 100% cannot take credit for this. Somebody else found this online. But in the first episode, when Madeline Pryor, who at the time we think is Jean, is using Cerebro to look through Gyrick's mind, she's like, wait, something's wrong. Somebody else is. And then she gets cut off and she ends up in like this vision of the future type thing. But when she says somebody else's, there's a shot of a child with a purple crayon drawing Xavier's school on fire. And that's Bastion, presumably as a kid. So,
wow. Creepy kid.
Yeah.
Creepy kid. How about Bastion tuning the radio to Purple People Eater when he's doing his bad shit?
That was a little much.
I was like, turned
it back too at the end was
well. That's what I was going to say. It's fine if that's like sort of a scenic that was just playing kind of a thing. But the fact that he tunes the radio and then tunes it back, I was like, wow, this guy's a dork. This guy's a loser.
Also, how does he know that it's playing? You know what I mean? Did he request it ahead of time for his murder?
One goes out to Bastion, the leader of Operation Zero Tolerance.
OZT, if you know what I mean.
We've played it all OZT. Day.
hilarious. So that part is weird. The shaving of Magneto. What do we think?
What are we
that
doing?
Was one of my favorite crossovers from the 90s.
I think it was like they were like doing something else and they were like, oh, that seems a bit much. Just shave him. You know what I mean? It almost seems like a added or something that happened.
Here's my theory about what's going on with Magneto is, as we mentioned, there was the false flag operation where they assassinated Graydon Creed, I think it was, the presidential candidate. Whatever it is, I think the way that Bastion is talking about making Magneto pliable, I assume there's some sort of brainwashing thing going on. Magneto is already a hot touch point for the entire world. So as if he's able to brainwash him and make him do something that seems in retaliation for Genosha to humans, that will allow Bastion to be like, great, we're taking OZT worldwide. Here's my primed sentinels. Let's take it out in the open instead of in the shadows the entire time.
But the thing that this is clearly queuing up is Magneto after the shave is either going to have a sick goatee or just like a Magnum PI mustache. You know what I mean?
Maybe
like,
he's giving him the same beard that Bastion has that we're trying.
Flavor saver.
I assume he's going to like groom him so that he looks like classic Magneto instead of long haired Magneto. So you get that iconic red costume look coming back and attacking humanity.
What I was going to say is that helps explain two things: the Rogue Magneto relationship stuff, because that'll be a great way to pay that storyline off later if Magneto goes quote unquote rogue and she has to then fight him / meet up with him. And it
you
also
think
explains
the haircut is going to really make a difference when he meets Rogue again. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying like him coming back as a brainwashed version of himself.
Yeah, but you don't think Rogue is going to notice the new haircut is my question.
She might be like, wow, Sugar, you look really nice today. But I was going to say also, It might explain why he has the god awful M costume for most of the season, so that they can return him to the red costume.
God awful! How dare you?
I'm like, Magneto's being set up as like
light of the day,
a philosophical belief driven human. My wardrobe, it's a big purple M on my shirt. I'm sorry, that does not quite track.
Say the guy wearing a shirt that says Dr. Pepper right now.
Yeah, Via Pepper. What's up?
Via Pepper.
He's a doctor.
Just have a sweater on, that's all. I like the costume, but I think
you like the M costume?
It's
fine to
be costume.
Fine with it, but you're saying you like it?
I love it.
Wow.
I wish I could wear it every day.
Alex, oh, I got big news for you. Brother, you can. You can wear a shirt with a big M on it, like Alvin the Chipmunk.
When I'm in the M costume, Pete's wearing it just his underwear. Justin's, I don't know.
Popping claws, baby. Come
on. Drinking Dr. Pepper. Alex, you have to wear a costume with a big A on it because you're Alex, like Alvin the Chipmunk.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Like just a onesie?
Yeah, uh-huh. Giant, like Simon. Oversized sweater, yeah.
Do you think Simon wore underwear? I always wondered about that.
Whoa. We gotta take that out. That's too weird. We finally, Alex, you finally crossed the line. I always wondered if Simon wore underwear. That's a crazy, one of the wildest statements I've ever heard.
So speaking of diamond-shaped people, you know, we get the Emma Frost reveal, mm-hmm. which I thought was kind of funny how they, like, made a big deal to show up and be like, hey, we're here to help save one person and then just peaced. You know what I mean? Just like,
no. I know you're making jokes, but I think they are still there. I think they are still helping out, even though, you know, or they're going to come back. But
we got to go to Manaport.
I really like that moment. I thought that was very emotional, and it also comes pretty much directly from New X-Men, where Emma is in Genosha, right, and comes out with her diamond form. So we learn about secondary mutations, which is a thing that Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely introduced in their run on the comic book. So that's what we're getting there. But I thought it was touching. I'm seeing everybody cry and get a little bit of hope by seeing Emma alive. I thought that was very cool.
Beast quoting Mr. Rogers is what got me. I was like, oh, man, find the helpers, Beast.
He really had to say who it was, too, right?
Yeah.
Was very like, you miss 100% of the shots you never take.
Yeah.
Michael Scott.
Yeah. It was Beast doing his thing, which is nothing, and then occasionally saying one thing.
Hey, he was cold as ice to that reporter, and that was fun.
I really wanted Trish Tilby to walk up and be like, Trish Tilby, Cyclops botherer, with more questions.
Well, like, it's also weird. I think Beast is unlikable on this show, and Trish, like reporter who's causing problems, the way they're leading into their relationship, I'm like, what part of it? Who likes this part?
I don't know. It's from the comics. Yeah, I'm still not sure what they're doing with Beast, and it really felt shoved in with all the quoting stuff back and forth to each other this episode.
Yeah, he's like Clippy from the old Microsoft. He's just always popping up saying something.
Yeah.
Do something.
He's not as annoying as Clippy is, bro. Take it down a notch.
Wow, offended. Suddenly offended.
What would you do if you tune in next week and Clippy's in the opening credits instead of Beast?
In his underwear, that pops up, waves.
Oh my god!
Just play the lottery. Idea.
Yeah,
he's sort of eating Wolverine's lunch because he could sort of pop his one little thing off and stab someone.
Anything else for the episode we should talk about? Any other moments?
We didn't talk about how Cable shows up.
Yeah, let's skip the reunion, Dad. Cold as ice. I loved it.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great moment. Like, it was definitely like, oh, that's Cable. And then they spent time being like, yeah, that's Cable. Here he is.
Yeah, they really, we got the sort of the four shot, like, let's look at all of his different attributes before we got to him. I was like, nice. But what are we heading toward here? It feels like if he can time travel, why is he coming now to just be mean to his dad?
I don't know. I think there's going to be some sort of like, there are fixed points in time, blah, 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 whatever. We'll find out something about it. There'll be some complicated time travel stuff and they'll explain it in some way otherwise it doesn't make sense that he's like, nope, couldn't save my mom, but here I am for my dad. We should talk about the whole fight and the whole thing with Trask, though. Yeah.
Trask, yeah.
Yes. Specifically, we should probably talk about Rogue killing Trask, which has been another big thing that's been
that was
a lot online.
When she did that, I was just like, somebody wake up and it's a dream, right? Like, this can't really just be happening right there.
I mean, she's been pushed too far. I think it tracked to me, and the fact that
it was just crazy that she saved him just to then be like, no, I'm a kill you. I was like, you could just let him go.
I like that moment. Like, I'm very firmly in the realm that heroes should never kill. I don't. Obviously, she crossed a line there, but the rest of the team, or at least most of the team, is like, you just crossed a line. What is happening here? And that's something that I think they will deal with and she has to deal with. She also started as a villain. So this is her sliding back. And that's something that feels inherently X-Men to me, that they kind of move back and forth in these ways. It's not treated as a good thing. It's not treated as a heck yeah moment or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's a turning point for Rogue that she will emotionally have to reckon with as we go forward, I think.
Well, and I like, unlike so many comic book stories where it's like, should I do it? I'll do it. I'm going to get in this. I won't. And all of that. It felt like she made the decision in the moment because of her grief and what she's been dealing with, and then regretted it instantly when she's confronted with it. And they're grappling with that when it turns out the dude she killed was a robot monster. So
yes.
I thought it was just really well handled emotionally, and it made for a much better version of that moment.
I wondered if, like, maybe, you know, off camera, she was like, oh, I knew he was – that's why I dropped him. I knew he was a cyborg monster the whole time.
How much off-camera stuff you think they're getting on this show? The behind the scenes? When the animated characters, like, when they call cut and they talk to the people, like, off-camera.
Go good take, Scott. Nice job. Crafty. I really felt that.
Yeah.
What did you think about the moment where Cyclops and Jean fall off the roof and Cyclops is like, I'll get the building, you get me, or something like that? Is that the line?
Yeah.
I think you said, I'll get the building, you get a burrito for later.
Yeah, well, whatever it was, he got none of that, and she got everything.
Yeah, she had to do everything, yeah.
Literally.
Classic everything. Cyclops. Indeed.
And they just let Wolverine fall, by the way, because they're like, oh, he can heal.
He's fine.
Yeah.
Well, if you're catching, you know, when you're in the kitchen and your bunch of stuff is falling, you catch the knife, not the egg.
What?
No, you catch the egg, not the knife.
There we go. There it is.
Let the knife hit the ground.
Well, first you catch the knife, then you cut the egg in half midair. Then...
Now, I want to see you drop stuff. Sounds magical.
I love all the time that you have to think when you drop things.
What? I act pretty fast. The moment when they're Bastion and Sinister are watching, like, the Shi'ar News Network or whatever, and they're just being like, Professor X, he's alive.
And they're like, I was like, look at this guy.
In a weird scene, that was an even weirder moment for them to take time.
It felt very behind the scenes.
I assume since we have three episodes to go, right, that tees up Sinister very specifically going after Xavier while Bastion starts to go after the rest of the team. I think that's what that was there for.
Well, but Professor X is coming back to Earth. They don't know that yet, right? So, like, is Sinister just going to, like, you see Sinister going to go into space?
Do you think they'll pass each other? That would be pretty funny.
I know.
Sinister's like, gets to the Shi'ar homeworld and is like, where's Xavier? And they're like, oh my God, you just missed him.
He's like, I call in my nasty boys. They'll come pick me up. But it does sort of, like, what's our division of labor? You think Sinister's going to go after Professor X?
Yeah.
While Bastion's going after everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, I assume Bastion, as soon as he activates all the Prime Sentinels and everything else, is just going to be like, we're probably going to see a bunch of roundup scenes, things where it's like the X-Factor is being taken down and New Mutants are being taken down and all these cameos and other things, maybe even taking down some of the X-Men characters in the crossover. I think Jubilee was captured for most of the time, so we'll probably see something on that with Roberto activating his full sunspot powers to go and save her and probably publicly ruining his mom's stock options and everything.
Well, that's what I say. Let's call our shots for what we think is going to happen. That was going to be mine. I think
this is called going to our vision board at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Have we gone there, Alex? Have we entered the vision board?
We're out of the Q&A portion. Okay. The recap portion. Now it's time to turn to our vision board, where we look at what's coming forward.
Well, I think the flaw in his plan is that Mr. Sinister is just hooked on As the Shi'ar Turns, and he's supposed to go to space, but he's like, I can't miss an episode of this. I'm going to stay right here and watch this all. And that's where I think the plan's going to fall apart. Mr. Sinister is going to betray Bastion, and the X-Men will be able to hopefully take him down.
Why don't you think he calls himself Dr. Sinister? He is a doctor. Is it just he likes the rhyming?
I think so. Sinister? Yeah, it just feels better flow-wise, you know? Plus, if you have a diamond in the middle of your head, you know what I mean? Like, how things are said are super important, you know what I mean?
Oh, interesting. Interesting statement. A couple follow-up questions.
I feel like I've called a lot of shots already for episodes going forward.
Okay, big time. Take it down a notch.
No, I feel like I've been talking about a lot of the stuff going forward. I'm not saying I'm great at it. I'm terrible at it. But I do. Yeah, I don't know. I want to call like way farther ahead. And at the end of the Operation Zero Tolerance crossover, the comics, that led into Cyclops and Jean Grey leaving the team.
Oh, I thought you were going to say breaking up.
No, and going to Alaska. And staying off the team for a while.
Probably breaking up, though, while they're in Alaska, right?
No, I think we're going to get that, because the whole thing at the beginning of the season was Cyclops and Madeline Pryor talking about that. So I think we will get that payoff there, where Cyclops and Jean Grey will stay together and be like, we got to recommit to our relationship and leave the team for a while and kind of figure everything out after everything that happened. The other, this is not even necessarily a big call because he's been kind of cagey about it, but when somebody online asked Bo DeMeo, they're like, oh man, I hope you're not doing Age of Apocalypse because that really needs a whole season. He tweeted back, I agree. So I kind of wonder if in some way this is going to kick us into Age of Apocalypse, which might be all of season two, which would be wild.
That would be very cool. And I will say, we have seen Apocalypse in the opening credits a lot. And if there's one thing we can take away from the season so far, is the opening credits tell us what's happening. Like, and will continue to, I think. So seeing Apocalypse there definitely feels like we're going to get.
I'm glad we're finally talking about the opening credits. I just feel like it sets such a fun tone for the whole episode.
Oh my God, Pete.
No, but I do. I wanted to say,
what do you think's coming up in the opening credits for next episode?
I think Storm's going to come back. And electrocute Bastion back into Nimrod, and then he's going to fall in love with construction again. You know what I mean?
What a master of the Bastion origin we have here. The couple things I was going to say is, like, I agree completely. Roberto has to become sort of the full version of himself very publicly. That's being set up so hard. I think Cyclops is being pushed to the line. The fact that Rogue went and, you know, killed someone in this episode, quote unquote. I feel like Cyclops is next in line for a big moment in that regard. He's had the interview.
He's going to kill somebody. Is that what you're saying?
He's going to just
Trish Tilby.
He's going to maybe. It's weird. They're right there. They're right there next to each other. She keeps dogging him. But the hang up on the president, the hologram hang up. I feel like something's coming for him, and I think whatever that is, will prompt something like what you're saying, Alex. He and Jean leaving the team. But with Professor X coming back and Cyclops, it was set up at the beginning of this season.
And Storm coming back.
And Storm. But the two I'm talking about, Professor X and Cyclops, they're like their leader. They're in the leader position. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen there? Something's going to happen. Well, is Professor X going to?
I don't think he's going to step in immediately necessarily. But I do think if Cyclops and Jean leave, that leaves a space for Professor X to come in. If Magneto is brainwashed into being bad again, he realizes that and is also like, I can't lead the X-Men. So again,
Storm's going to lead the X-Men.
Yeah, we could totally get Storm leading the X-Men at the end of the season or something like that. The other thing that I wanted to throw out as a prediction on the Magneto being brainwashed front, I think the thing that's going to happen is he's going to kill or attack President Kelly is what's going to happen, because there was a very clear setup of that in this episode where he's like, you'd hate to have somebody else who wasn't on your side here. I'm on your side.
Right.
So turn the president, you get Operation Zero Tolerance going. I think that's kind of how we're going to go here.
The only, yeah, I agree. The other thing I was going to say is I feel like philosophically, Cyclops versus Professor X. Professor X goes into space. All this bad stuff happens. He's sort of just screwing around in space with mm-hmm. other stuff. Not much has changed for him. Everything has changed for the X-Men. He is not going to be aware of how they've become different, harder edge. That's what the Rogue thing, this mm-hmm. episode is portending, I think. And I think we're going to get a big Cyclops Professor X confrontation, because he's going to be the one that has to say that stuff.
What if I'm connecting too many dots here, but what if Professor X dies in some fashion, and that for real this time, and that kicks off Age of Apocalypse somehow?
Or Schism, or Wolverine.
Don't you think, I don't know, this show feels like it would do the actual Age of Apocalypse thing with Legion and getting, like, mm-hmm. they're so wonky.
Yeah,
why? I feel like they'd be like, we got to do this thing. And do the weirdest version of it, which is, what, Legion going back in time, right, and killing?
Yeah. I mean, the other even wilder possibility that I kind of hope they don't do, but they could do Onslaught at the end here, because Onslaught, wow. who is a brain baby of Professor Xavier and Magneto, led directly into Operation Zero Tolerance, because people were like, oh my God, Professor X and Magneto had a baby that attacked the whole world, seemingly killed the Fantastic Four and the Avengers. We don't like them. That kind of gave Bastion the end there. If instead we got that moment, too many things here, but that moment from Fatal Attractions where Magneto rips the skeleton out of Wolverine and Professor X shuts down his mind, which causes Onslaught to happen somehow, I could see that happening towards the end of the season as well.
Magneto pulling the skeleton out of Wolverine's a great call, because that would be something for Wolverine to do. It would be something where they would then...
Sorry, I just like phrasing it as like, oh, that's something nice for Wolverine to do.
Well, it's a storyline for him, and then he is... Do we do the whole Bone Claws thing? The next season, we get him exploring his past in a real way, where he's like, oh, I'm not just a Weapon X, I had a whole other life. Like, that could be great. And that then centralizes Wolverine in a way that we haven't really seen in this series too much. Doing Onslaught, though, there's so much non-X-Men world to bring in there, and mm-hmm. so chaotic. I also think Magneto's philosophy has changed so much. He's not... The whole point of Onslaught was like, the power of Professor X, but with the bad vibes mm-hmm. of Magneto. And that's just not... We're not there anymore. So that would be the wildest swing. And the fact that at the end of that, it wasn't it Franklin Richards created a new world?
Yeah, to save this it. I'll just explain this really simply. So Onslaught is this physical armor that encases energy. He ingests Professor Xavier. Then he ingests Franklin Richards, who is the son of Reed Richards and Sue Storm, who has almost...
Very powerful mutant, reality-bending powers.
Yeah. And then he also takes in Nate Gray, who is the Age of Apocalypse version of Cable, who doesn't have the techno-organic virus, so he has a lot of power. So once he has the three of them inside of them, he tries to remake and destroy the world. The Fantastic Four and Avengers stop him by stepping inside of him. Like you were saying, Franklin actually saves them by creating a pocket universe, which was the Heroes Reborn universe, so that they were still there. Everybody blamed the X-Men for the Fantastic Four and the Avengers dying, but it wasn't their fault, man. And then they came back. So
Simple as that.
So all of that will happen.
That seems insane.
Yes. We should probably wrap up here. I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up with an explanation of how Heroes Reborn was set up. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We can explain more things like this, I guess. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
Shouts to my guy Guido, strong guy. We get to see him in this episode. I didn't say before. Love it.
Shouts to always selecting the diet soda option because there's a secret elevator behind the soda machine.